What a catalyst that the orgasm was,
and
for
truly,
all these things.
Truly. And like when I realized, you know, you don't always realize this in the moment, but sort of in hindsight, I was like, oh, the G-spot orgasm was the catalyst. It was the genesis and the catalyst for everything else that's happened in my life in the last few years. That's insane.
Welcome to Sweet Release Podcast with me, Barbie Jean.
Hi, sweets. Welcome back. Today, I'm sitting next to this beautiful Serena. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to kind of dive into your relationship. You've been in a partnership for 12 years, right?
12 years.
That's a long time. I'm in my longest relationship now of like 5 years. And that to me just feels like eons. So we're kind of going to dive into just like your, obviously you guys have been through a lot. I feel like longer relationships, there's like milestones, there's growth, there's evolution. Mm-hmm. And I had a recent guest ask me, or a recent listener ask me like how to, like what longevity in relationships mean to me. And I was talking a lot about communication and exploration. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just really excited to hear what it's been like for you. So,
Thank you. We'll get into all the dirty details.
I know, it's so exciting. Well, maybe start like, how did you two meet? And like, what was it like in the beginning?
So we met on the set of Larry King's talk show. We were like in the process of launching his talk show that he made after his like big CNN show. It was a Hulu show. And, I was dating up a storm at the time. And I was 27, and it was that time of life when I feel like a lot of women in particular were kind of like looking for their forever person. And I was not, like, I was having the fucking time of my life and I had no intention of settling down. And he was the director of photography on the show. I came on as a producer, and there was just this energy between us. And he was way more reserved than most of the men I had dated. I have a really big personality, and I had thought that I should be with another like sort of alpha type, somebody who could like run the room with me. And he just had this like indelible presence about him. Like, he was just so locked in whenever we were talking. And one night I like orchestrated drinks at a bar with the crew under the guise of us all getting to know each other. It was really just that I wanted to get him to a bar.
Of course.
And we were at the bar and like opened up to each other in ways that were kind of surprising. He told me a story about his childhood. And after he told me, he had this like look of horror on his face. And he was like, I never tell anybody that story. And I'm thinking like, that's probably like a move.
Pickup line.
You probably do tell that story. I found out later he really was not kidding. He really does not tell that story. And we were like, we admitted to our attraction to each other, and we were like, but you know what? We're not going to act on it. This job is too important to us both. We've had other work things in the past go sideways. And our elbows were like almost imperceptibly touching at the bar. And it was just like the electricity between the two of us. And we're walking back to our cars with all of our crew at the end of the night. And he just started making out with me. So we like made out voraciously that night on the street, and he asked if he could come over. And I said, no, because if you come over, I'll fuck you, and we're not going to fuck. We're not doing this. And then the next day I went into the studio and someone was like, hey, I saw you making out with Ian last night. And I was like, no. And they were like, no, like I saw it. And I was like, no, you didn't. And they were like, wow, this is like really rude. You're just lying to my face. But I wasn't ready for it to be a thing that was being talked about. I didn't know if it was going to be a thing. And then 1 week later, we went for drinks again and had sex in my car. And
oh my God, yes.
That was basically it. Like I was in love with him in like 5.5 seconds. I just knew immediately. He knew immediately. But I fought it for a second because I was sort of committed to my singlehood. And so I was like, for the first few weeks at least, like still sort of forcing myself to go on dates with some of these guys that I've been seeing. And I remember at one point I was on a date with a very fancy man. And we were at a very fancy dinner. And I was just trying to figure out like how to like stealth text Ian under the table without this guy noticing. And then at one point I like looked at the phone and I thought, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're clearly in love with this person. Like, stop fighting it. That was 12 years ago.
Oh my God. Wow. What a story. I love that. I love that car sex too is the first time. Oh my
God. Oh my God. And I can say this here because this is a sex podcast. Like the moment of entry, I was like, oh wow. Okay. Like it wasn't just the physicality of it. You know how sometimes like there's something that you can just like glean about what this partnership and this connection is. It was like the moment we started having sex, I was like, oh yeah, this is like on some other shit entirely, you know?
Yeah, I feel similarly with my partner now. There was a moment that we like stopped because it was like so intense, the energy. And we were like, looked at each other and we're like, are we going to do this? Like, are we actually doing this? Like there was a moment of pause because we were like, okay, if we do this, like this is happening.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. And it was similar, you know, in that way. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. You kind of know it's like, it's sort of, yeah, if you're going to make the next step on the journey, it's sort of the point of no return.
Totally.
You recognize. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Love it's a good that. Feeling.
It's a great feeling. What do you think was like one of the first like big kind of milestones for you in the realms of pleasure and intimacy or whatever in your relationship?
Well, he likes to remind me of this sometimes, but that night that we had sex in my car, the first week that we made out, he had asked if he could come over and I had said no. And then the second week we ended up having sex in my car and it was like Titanic style, like the windows like fogged up. And at the end he looked at me and he said, can I come over now? And I was like, okay, yeah. Yeah, you can come over. And I think it was that night. It was either that night or the next time that we got together. And he was going down on me. And I was like, just so you know, like I'm like kind of a tough nut to crack. Like I probably won't come. And he was like, okay. And then of course he made me come multiple times. So I think also in that moment I was like, okay. And you know, that's like, I mean, I often say that he's sort of like hiding his greatest gift from the world because he's incredibly skilled in that regard. But you know this, like it's one part is the physicality and the prowess and the technique and whatever. And then the other component is just like the connection. And I think sometimes our bodies know things about our connections before our minds do. I think often our bodies know things before our minds and our intellect does. And so that to me was like a big indicator. I was like, oh, wow. Like I already feel like I'm in a space of such safety with this person. I feel so open to this human. So that was like very indicative. And he's just been just like incredibly, incredibly committed to my pleasure this whole time. And I think I've always been a person who was pretty oriented to my pleasure. At least I thought I was. But I think as women, you sometimes don't even realize the extent to which you're having performative sex until you stop having performative sex. And in so many ways, I wasn't having performative sex with him, but in some ways I still was. And he would sometimes notice it when I wasn't. And he would be like, hey, don't do that. You know what I mean? You don't have to do that with me. Or like, hey, like, if something hurts or it feels uncomfortable or whatever, like don't hide that information from me. Like it doesn't make me feel good or connected or into this experience if you are not showing up honestly, you know? But that's a lot. It's a lot of programming that you have to undo. And there's also like a slight like pride or I think even like embarrassment piece to it because I have always been like a very sex positive and sexually open person to have to recognize and like contend with the fact that like I was maybe having performative sex, that there were elements of my sexual experiences that I was engaging in not really driven by my own pleasure and desire was like that was stuff that I had to deal with unpacking, you know? Mm-hmm. And he really helped bring that to light for me,
yeah,
you know,
that awareness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like I too had, you know, a very very exploration decade of my life where, you know, I was having a lot of sex and I was doing a lot of things, but there were some times where I would do things that I didn't want to, or in hindsight, it was like to please the other person, mm-hmm. or like you were saying, kind of in a performative mm-hmm. way. And so I do agree that you kind of go through sometimes these moments of mindfulness where you're like, whoa, when you're finally with that person where you can be vulnerable and be yourself, it's like, wow, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Totally. And it's like, I would love to hear your stance on this, but I think it's really complex. Like, there is a really deep pleasure also that you can get out of the knowledge that you're turning somebody else on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Somebody else being turned on by you can be a turn on in and of itself, right? I don't think that's without merit, but I remember I had this like brain-breaking realization a couple of years ago. Or a few years ago, maybe, where I was like, wow, I thought to myself, what proportion of my sexual interactions with other people have been more about their desire for me and their desire for me than sort of like cultivating desire in myself, or like me being turned on by them being turned on, right? Mm-hmm. The feeling of being wanted versus what proportion of my sexual experiences have truly come from, like truly from like an innate me-driven desire. And like, when I really thought about it, I was like, wow, there's like a lot in column yeah. A, you know, and there's stuff in column B for sure. And you can feel that difference. Like, you know, that difference in your bones. Right. So then I started asking some of my girlfriends about it. Some of my girlfriends were like, 100% column A, mm-hmm. literally never had had a sexual interaction that had like really come from their own, truly their own internal sense of desire. Then I asked Ian the question. Ian was like, I don't understand the question. I was like, okay, let me repeat this again for you. You know, he's like, I have never had a sexual interaction that hasn't come from my own
right.
internal sense of desire. And I thought, you know, I don't want to like overstate the gender differences here, especially like in hetero relationships. But I do think like this is something that we run into mm-hmm. a lot where, and it like provoked like a lot of like really intense conversations with a lot of my female friends about like, whoa, like have I never, you know, some of my friends being like, have I never had a sexual interaction that like truly came from me? That's crazy. And I think that's the case for a lot of people actually.
Yeah, it is. I talk a lot about that too, because I think people are fearful to be themselves or embrace their erotic authenticity is mm-hmm. what I like to call it. And so it's, yeah, I think that's something that I'm trying to, you know, help people and break those walls down and allow people to really, yeah, embrace what they love and what they want to experience and really harness that sexual power.
Has it always come to you naturally?
I think so. But I think with experiencing some moments of like assault and discomfort or like, you know, kind of toxic relationships, I feel like sometimes I would pull back on my sexual power, or it would just kind of get confusing and convoluted, or mm-hmm. I would just be less powerful because I felt like some power was taken away from me. So mm-hmm. it's definitely been like a roller coaster, but I think throughout the majority of my sex life, I have felt, really, really good about it. Yeah.
Are there ever moments, I don't want to take over as interviewer here, but I got questions. Are there ever moments, like, especially given what you do, that like, you know, this is your, in many ways, like your life's work. Are there ever moments where you don't feel as connected to your eroticism or your own sense of sexuality or sensuality? And then what do you do to get it back in those moments?
I think for me, I think just self-pleasure is like a big way, I feel like, for me to like get mm-hmm. back and connect to myself. And so if I'm ever feeling like disconnected to work, to life, to partnership or anything, I feel like just connecting with myself is like a big tool for me. Mm-hmm. And really just talking about it, I think, with loved, you know, people I love and trust, and kind of trying to be like, oh, like what is it that's like feeling a little off? Like, was it this episode where I talked about this? Was it this even just like a comment that made me feel insecure in myself? Or is this like a reaction to something that isn't really in truth, you mm-hmm. know? But yeah, what about you?
I always have to come back to my body, you know, yeah. And it sounds like you're saying also self-pleasure is a component of that for sure. I think for me, I've been a serious dancer my whole life mm-hmm. and dance plays a really big role in my life now after many years as an adult of it not being in my life. And that has made like such an intensely profound difference. Like that just keeps me connected to my body in a totally different way and in my sensuality and sort of like more in my divine feminine, mm-hmm. you know, connected to my sense of intuition and to my kinetic intelligence. That makes a huge difference. But I've also noticed like most people, like stress is just like such a fucking libido killer, you know, so I have to be. And I have had like historically had an intensely demanding career and burnt out really badly a few years ago in a way that like truly scared the shit out of me. And so recalibrated my life in a lot of ways and recommitted myself to my meditation practice and a gratitude practice mm-hmm. and breath work and, you know, yeah. very Venice. but shit works.
All that shit works.
It works. And so I just have to be like hyper vigilant and aware when the stress is setting in, like mm-hmm. use your tools, yeah. you know, get out in the sunshine and take a walk every day. Totally. Keep dancing, dance, right? Yeah. Because this is the thing about, this is the human nature. And I talk about this on my show also, right? Like, you know to do all the things when you're feeling good, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the moment the shit hits the fan, all of your practices and your strategies and your techniques fall by the wayside. So okay. I have notifications on my phone that pop up.
Oh, nice. Remind you.
On the regular. Yeah, yeah.
That's to a like good idea.
Remind me of things, you know? Like, says things like, your energy is your greatest currency and to you, for you, because of you, right? Things are not mm-hmm. happening to you. They're happening for you. Then the next level is things are not happening for you. They're happening because of you. You create your own reality, you know, mm-hmm. accept people's help. So things like that. And if I'm moving into a moment of high stress, I'll like set some extra notifications for myself. Just
yeah, words of affirmations. I feel like I've used that a lot in the past.
Yeah.
Even at a low point for sure. It's good reminders to have.
Those. Yeah, we need them. Mm-hmm. We need them.
Well, let's get back to some pleasure moments in your relationship.
Yeah.
You talked about it was difficult for you to climax before him, but then he kind of opened that side of you. Did he unlock any other types of orgasms?
Yeah. And I will say, like, I don't think it was any more difficult for me than it is for most women. You know, I think I'm like pretty typical. I was only ever coming clitorally, right? Mm-hmm. And you've seen the stats and the research, right? I was just like of the mindset that like I'm part of the 80% of women who can't
have an internal one. Yeah.
And I was like, that's okay. That's me. That's my body. I have really powerful external orgasms, clitoral orgasms. Like I feel great, you know? And for years, he kept saying to me, no, you can have an internal orgasm. Like you can have a G-spot orgasm for sure. And I was like, fuck you. Don't tell me what my body can do. You know, like believe women, you know, like come on. And he was like, no, like very gently, but just like had such a sense of conviction and belief. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago via who knows what, some kind of alchemy, it happened. And the very first time that it happened, it was, I mean, obviously just from like a purely physical perspective, like fucking phenomenal, right? And feels totally different. And G-spot orgasm feels totally different than a clitoral orgasm, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way that I've like tried to describe it to people who haven't had the experience of both is like a clitoral orgasm, which is incredible also. And I don't hate on those. And if you're having those, then amazing, you know, any kind of orgasm is a good orgasm. But like a clitoral orgasm to me feels like almost this kind of like frenetic energy, right? And it's almost like something that you can't control. And it's like a thing that's almost like getting away from you. And it's like, you know, and it's like, there's something that feels, as it is an external orgasm, very externalized about it. A G-spot orgasm, like, I have never felt so deeply like in my power as a woman. It feels like I feel so embodied, so embodied. And, you know, when you start having them, you can really play with them and control them. And there's these waves and you can extend them and make them last a really long time. And you can have them over and over and over and over and over again. And it was such an insane feeling of personal power. And it was also so intensely emotional the first time it happened. Like, it happened. And then I just started like inconsolably weeping. And he just held me. And I said to myself, what else have I been holding myself back from? What else have I been telling myself that I can't do? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, immediately I made the connection to all these other areas of my life. Right. It wasn't just about the sex. It wasn't just about the orgasm. It wasn't just about the physicality. It wasn't just about the connection with my partner. It was like, oh shit, you have all this power in you that you aren't even recognizing, you know? And I think I'm like a pretty fucking empowered person naturally already. So
it was eye-opening. Yeah.
So eye-opening, like truly life-altering. Mm-hmm. And what's been interesting is I think that was maybe 2.5-3 years ago. And since then, it feels like there's been this like peeling back of the onion that's been happening progressively. Like, dance plays this huge role in my life. It hadn't as an adult, but it's like my purest, truest love and always will be. And a few months after we unlocked G-spot orgasms, which, by the way, like, once I get unlocked, like, that box is not getting closed again. You know what I mean? It's just like a button you can push. Like, it's crazy. Once that happened, then like a few months later, I got introduced to this queer line dancing community on the East Side called Stud Country. And I grew up as a trained dancer. So my initial reaction was like a little bit of like, I mean, line dancing, like, you know, and I went and it was, I was immediately addicted. It's like disco balls and party lighting. And some of the dancers are to country music. And some of them we do to like modern day bangers. And it's like 400 people, the most like joyful, inclusive, expressive community. Started going to that, started getting a bunch of attention because I'm a dancer. Within a few months, the people who run it said, do you want to start like hosting and teaching these nights? So I moved into that, like completely transformative for my life. Wow. I'm moving back into my role as a performer, as a dancer. I'm getting dance in my life like consistently twice a week. So it was like G-spot orgasm, the dance thing. I had had this dream forever and ever to start my own talk show. I had worked for Oprah. I had worked for Larry. I had worked for Masterclass as a director and an interviewer and a producer, but always behind the camera. And a few months after the Stud Country thing came into my life, I managed to like get the gumption to start the show. That's completely changed my life. Mm-hmm. And then a few months after that, you know, kind of by virtue of going to Stud twice a week and being surrounded by this queer community. I'd never considered myself straight. And my husband's aware of that. Most of the people in my life are aware of that. But I think like by, you know, by virtue of probably just like the path of just sort of going the path of least resistance, you know, the vast majority of my sexual experiences and all of my truly romantic experiences had been with cis men. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I'm going to Stud Country and I'm just like
surrounded by queer,
you know, and it's like, of course, like we all have gay friends and whatever, but it's very different when you're in a space where like you as a mostly straight or straight passing person aren't the majority population anymore, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not centered. And I would come home at like 1 a.m. on Mondays and Thursdays and Ian would be asleep and I would like wake him up and I'd be like, I have this crush on this lesbian. I have a crush on this like trans guy, like whatever, you know? So we were talking about it. And Ian's a deeply sexual person also. And I think by by virtue of just our belief systems, like, we don't really believe in love as possession to begin with. Mm-hmm. So we had had a lot of conversations over the years around, like, what would it look like to, you know, bring somebody else in for a threesome or to open up in some capacity. And so I'm having these conversations with him. And then there was like an energy that started being cultivated with one woman in particular. And so it went from being theoretical to being real. And I said, you know, I've never really explored my queerness. Mm-hmm. And here I am walking through the world as this like mostly sexually embodied and empowered human being. But I don't want to wake up at 70 and be like, this is just like a piece of me that I never really allowed to come forth or explore. And to his credit, he was like, go for it. You know, I mean, obviously, like there were some deep, some deep conversations that had to be had. But he said, yeah, he said, go for it. And so that was kind of like the fourth peeling back of the onion.
What a catalyst that the orgasm was.
And
for
truly,
all these things.
Truly. And like when I realized, you know, you don't always realize this in the moment, but sort of in hindsight, I was like, oh, the G-spot orgasm was the catalyst. It was the genesis and the catalyst for everything else that's happened in my life in the last few years.
That's, I loved it.
And that's insane, you know? And that's where I think like, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but like that's where I think like the way that we talk about sex and the way that we like place sex in this box in our society just like actually doesn't make any sense, because it really can be such an incredible pathway to our own evolution and self-actualization, I think. And
so true.
And when you experience that firsthand, you're like, I mean, I'm sure this is why you're making the show. You just have this feeling of like, oh, I just want to share this with everybody. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to feel this because it's so incredibly transformative.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well said, all of that. Thanks for sharing everything. I have so many questions, I guess. I'm curious. So, you know, you started exploring your queerness. Had you ever been with a woman before your husband? Yeah. So you had kind of dabbled into it a little bit.
Yeah.
But then it was just like really kind of you wanted to dive in fully.
Yeah. I'd slept with a handful of women in the past, and truly like a handful. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'd always said things like, oh, I'd sleep with a woman, but I would never date a woman. And like now that strikes me as so ridiculous. Like I love women. Like I have so many incredibly close female friends. The level of emotional intimacy that just can so readily exist between women is it's unto itself. You know, it is its own like singular thing. So now looking back on it, I'm like, why did I have that stance? Now I recognize that I must have been operating out of fear in some capacity that I wasn't consciously acknowledging at the time.
Totally.
So I had slept with some women and, but I'd never like really fully explored. And honestly, when this thing started with this woman with whom it's now been many months, I didn't know that it was going to turn into, you know, a real fucking romance, you know?
Sure.
I kind of thought like, oh, I'll break the seal and we'll have some good sex and whatever. And we like each other and it'll be fun. And then maybe I'll like flit around and have a bunch of different experiences. And it didn't turn out that way. It has not turned out that way, which also like, you know, I think probably like all of the experts on polyamory and ethical non-monogamy would be like, oh fuck, you did this wrong, you know what I mean? Like some people who, and you know, it's like there's like these things that you're supposed to do and certain boundaries you're supposed to set prior, and you're supposed to think through a bunch of different scenarios, and Ian and I had a lot of deep talks. But I think fundamentally the premise that we thought we were entering was like me exploring my queerness and like going out and having some great physical experiences, and in actuality like I am an intimacy junkie. I'm a connection junkie, right? Mm-hmm. It's why I make the show. Also, it's probably why you do it. So like when I really thought about it, it was like, in what universe was I going to go and have like anything akin to like transactional sex? And by the way, women aren't really having transactional sex with each other all that often anyway, right?
True. So has it evolved, or like, is he also exploring on his side? Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, when he said to me, go for it, have at it, I said, well, what do you want on your side? And he said, I don't really know yet, but I don't need you to wait, you know, like, you start exploring and we'll mm-hmm. get there for me when we get there. And he has. So he's been out there. His approach is different than mine, you know, like he has seen multiple people over the last months.
This is kind of a recent thing, right? Like,
yeah, how long it was ago? January.
So you were together 8-9 months. 11 years.
Yeah.
And then you kind of decided to open the doors.
Yep.
Did you have a threesome or experiences together at all? Or
never.
Is this all separate? Oh, really?
Okay. Never. And he's desirous of that. And so am I. But for it's interesting, for whatever reason, like that seems way more nerve wracking to me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is seeing your partner with someone else.
Yeah.
Is like totally bizarre at first. But it's also, I'm an exhibitionist too, but I'm way more of a voyeur. So I love seeing it. But I feel like the first time is always like a little bit weird.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah.
Like weird how?
I think just the way that you have sex with your partner, you like know it to your core. Mm-hmm. But when your partner is with someone else, it's different.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same way that he's interacting with you. And maybe that's also like something that's unique, and it's like a way that you can be like, oh, like our connection is maybe deeper because there's this component. But I feel like you have to like step out of like the comparing, because mm-hmm. sometimes when you see your partner like doing the same things or doing a different thing, or you know, getting pleased in a way that you haven't seen them react or something too. It's just like, oh, wow. Like you have to like sit with it.
Yeah.
And I think jealousy too. Like, I think it's just like learning to feel jealousy on your body and like let it move through you, or like sit with it or kind of like process it and just understand it and just be like, oh, like this is, for me, I feel like I've never been a super jealous person, but it sometimes comes up in moments that are unexpected for me.
Interesting.
But I do really find a lot of pleasure in watching people I love experience pleasure.
Conversion.
Conversion. but I do get really turned on with just being able to like sit back and enjoy the show. So I think for me, like group, we have never explored like relationships separately. We've always had women come into our relationship. We did have our first foursome recently, which was very exciting.
And it didn't just become 2 and 2?
No, the attention was all on me. It was like amazing.
Oh, wow.
I was like, this is perfect.
God, that's a dream.
Yeah, it was a treat. I mean, there was a moment where it was kind of like 2 and 2, but most of the energy was like on me, and I feel like the women, it started with some flogging with her and then me. And so, yeah, it was like a very awesome night.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
so fun.
For years, it was just women, because similarly, I define as bisexual. And so I was like, when we met, I was like, you know, I still want to be having sex with women. I would love to fall in love with a woman, you know? And so it was something that we knew from the beginning that was like, this is going to be something that we explore.
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating. I like to have diverse relationship styles and connections obviously on here. And so it's cool to hear ways that people can open up their relationships and what's worked for you.
Yeah.
Has there been any like learning experiences that you could educate people on?
Oh my God.
If they're thinking about doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Or lessons that you've learned.
Yeah. I mean, I think just really challenging yourself to be honest, not just with your partner, but with yourself.
Such, yeah, great
about
advice.
What's going on. I've suffered a lot of loss in my life and definitely have some abandonment stuff, as a lot of us do. And so there were moments where my inclination was to not fully let Ian in on what was going on with me and this other woman. Not even so much consciously, but I think on an unconscious level, I was like, ooh, I don't want to get left. I don't, you know, and he knowing me as well as he does, and because of how much personal development work we're both doing, you know, we had to like work through, like he kept saying to me, I'm not upset with you for having feelings for somebody else. Like he really did have to go and do the excavation and do the work of, you know, can I get to a place where this doesn't hurt me? And he did. And because he said, you know, there was one night a few months in and we were at a party and we might have been on a psychedelic substance. And so we were very open. And I said to him, like, I think I'm going to have to put the kibosh on this thing. And he was like, why? And I said, well, the feelings between us are really rapidly developing and I'm starting to get attached. And that's not what you signed up for, you know? And he sat there and he really thought about it. And he said, there is nothing that I cherish and value more in my life than freedom. And I don't think I can really say that I'm like the person who I would think myself to be if I clip yours. So he was like, I don't feel any less love coming toward me from you. I don't want to look at this from a scarcity model. So it's okay. Just be open with me. Mm-hmm. Just let me into the process. And I was just like, oh my God. And it's like, this is the thing too about opening up your relationship. Like you just fall in love with your partner, like all over again. Yeah. It's like he says something like that. I'm just like, oh my God, like marry me again. Jesus Christ. You know, who is so this true. Man? You know? And then of course there were like these moments where I wasn't fully letting him in. And so we had some really tough conversations where he was like, you're not going to lose me because of what's happening between you two. He's like, where you're creating the issue and the pain is by not letting me into the experience, right? Like you're being partly dishonest with me because you're trying to protect me or you're trying to protect our relationship. But that's actually the thing that's hurting our relationship, you know? And that's like real for as somebody with abandonment stuff, like that's really scary, you know? And so there have been hiccups along the way, or just like little things that like boundaries that you don't even know what you don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. So little boundaries get crossed and you didn't even know that it was like a boundary that needed to be set. So you have to get really comfortable apologizing. You know, we're not given the model. We're not given anything other than the model of monogamy, right? For the vast majority of us. So for most of us, when we open up, if we're opening up our relationship, you're kind of just fucking feeling around in the dark, right? Like mm-hmm. going like, I hope I'm doing it right, which means like invariably you're going to mess up, you know?
Always, yeah.
And then you have to be willing to just like apologize and learn from the experience and move forward. And, you know, fortunately, Ian and I think also like, and only you know this in your own relationship, but our union is so strong. Our foundation is so strong. There was another night when we might have been on a psychedelic substance. We were in like a sound meditation, and I saw this visual of us as this like really old, like deeply rooted tree. Mm. And I was like, okay, yeah, like we're good. We're solid. Like our shit is so deep. And I came out of that experience and that's kind of when I was like, okay, like, I think we can do this. Like we can handle it. So obviously like, okay, advice for people. Yeah. It's like being honest with the other person, but yeah. Really like you have to engage in self excavation and being honest with yourself. And I think also sometimes just being okay with, surrendering to not knowing, mm-hmm. you know, also because we've been conditioned in this way where we've been told that monogamy is the way and that you can only love one person at a time, right? Like sometimes when you're cultivating feelings for somebody else, if it's the first time, it can feel really scary. You're like, oh my God, what does this mean for my other partnership, right? And I have to kind of constantly remind myself, not so much anymore, but in the initial months, like to break out of binary modes of thinking, mm-hmm. right? one thing doesn't necessarily need to mean the absence of another thing, right? Cultivating, developing deep emotional connection with one person doesn't mean that it's being taken away from the other person. It can mean that if you're not careful about it, right? Or if there's like big fissures in your primary relationship, but it doesn't have to. And so I think some of it is also just reminding yourself as time goes on to like, I constantly just say like, don't think, shit, sorry. Don't think about it. I'm used to wearing a lavalier. Don't think about it in a binary matter, right? Mm-hmm. And that binary matter is also the scarcity model, right? It's like, if there's one thing, then it's being taken away from something else. Can we look at this from a space of abundance, right? Mm-hmm. That more love is more love, that more connection is more connection, that this can all be really, really expansive, you know? And so I think it's also just taking the time to sit and process it. You know, we don't give ourselves a whole lot of time in our modern day lives to sit and think and to just sit and process, to sit and be in stillness. And we sort of anticipate that like all the answers are just going to like fall in our lap as we're like fucking scrolling through our phones and watching Netflix and working 12 hours a day. And it's like, no, you need to provide yourself the space. So that's been an important part of this also, is just like giving myself the space to let it settle in my system.
I talk about that a lot. When you start feeling like heavy emotions or deep emotions, to really just sit and feel it on your body. And I think, yeah, that's where we've been talking a lot today, is how we feel it on our body first. And so that's like, I think a great takeaway too, when you're exploring fantasies or opening a relationship, is to really just, be honest with yourself and listen to how it's making your body feel, and be okay to like sway in different directions and allow yourself to surrender to it. Yeah. I think all of that you said already, so I'm just reiterating, it's beautiful.
It's been such an insanely expansive experience. I feel more like myself than I ever have.
That's awesome.
Which is so incredible. And it's like, if you can allow it to change you, you know, if you can allow it to be a vehicle for growth, it will be, right? And kind of to your point about like the jealousy coming up or moments of discomfort, right? When you're having a threesome or something, just like, instead of resisting those feelings, like allowing yourself to just sit with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just feel it, you know, like there's no version of this that if you're opening up your relationship for the first time where there's not going to be intense feelings of discomfort and pain and fear. Right. And also
ecstasy.
Yeah. It's insane. Oh my God. The orgasms I've been having from two people over the last 8 months. My God.
I know. Let's talk back about orgasms a little. I do love to end my episodes with that last sweet release moment. But I would love for you to like share that last internal G-spot sweet release moment. And like, is hopefully a lot of detail, because I feel like a lot of people haven't had it. We talked about this, you know, a lot of women haven't experienced it. I get questions about how can you squirt? How can you have these orgasms all the time? And so I think kind of if we could help people experience one and like how it's worked for you.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that like the G-spot orgasm has then like now all kinds of other things have been unlocked for me. Mm-hmm. So first it was the G-spot orgasm, then it was squirting, then it was cervical orgasms, which like, wow, that'll fucking bust your brain. Jesus Christ. You know, and like for people who don't know, it's like the cervical orgasm is just like even deeper. And so you think about it from like, from the perspective of who you are holistically as a human being, like it's physically deeper, but it also feels in some ways emotionally deeper, like spiritually deeper, you know, just sort of letting the experience into you in a different kind of way. That's wild. And, I'm sure you're very familiar with the erotic blueprint, but like, you know, just like love languages, there are these different erotic languages, and I'm very much an energetic and a sensual. And so now I've been able to move into the space of giving myself energetic orgasms without being touched at all.
Nice.
I haven't fully harnessed the power. Like, and it truly, like, it's moments when it happens, I'm like, am I a fucking witch? Like, what is happening? Like, this is insane. And, you know, generally, you know, one of my two partners is there privy to it. And they're also just like gobsmacked, you know, we're all just like, what is this sorcery? You know?
That is something I have not tapped into, an energy orgasm.
Wow.
I haven't really sat down and tried. I had someone on not long ago telling me about it. And I was like, I really need to sit down and like try. And I never did. I should try again.
Oh my God. Well, you sit down and try and then report back yes, to me. Yes. Have you had cervical orgasms?
Like that too. I don't think I have. I have. Sometimes the deep like guttural orgasms do feel like they're coming from the back, like anterior wall, which
yeah.
I feel like is kind of very similar erogenous zone. But I don't know if I've been able to decipher between like the internal ones that I've been having.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, I think for somebody who is trying to, I'm not an expert, so take this with a grain of salt, but, I think for somebody who is trying to cultivate the ability to have an energetic orgasm, for me, thinking about, and I think it would probably work if you do G-spot too, but for me, after I had a cervical orgasm, I think about building energy in that spot. Mm-hmm. I can kind of do it right now.
It's pretty awesome.
For some reason, that space is like a lot easier for me to engage in like an energetic build. And mm-hmm. I think about the energy, and sometimes I think about like a sort of like a golden light, like growing mm-hmm. in that space, and just being like really patient with yourself and not putting any pressure on it. Like I'm never like, okay, and now I need to come. I'm just like, this is like fun. Like, I don't know. Let's see if I can do it. See what happens. Yeah. And you just play around with it. And I think having partners who are just like incredibly supportive, like, you know, I think squirting can be really self-conscious for a lot of women. And it was for me, you know, when it first started happening, I just was like, even though I'd been with Ian for so many years, I like all of a sudden became this like deeply self-conscious version of myself. I'm like, is it okay? You know, he's like, it is the fucking hottest thing I've ever seen or experienced in my life. Right. You hear that enough from your partner, you go like, okay, you know, like it is hot. Right. And then like with my other lover, it's the same way. So that helps, like having somebody who's just like really, really supportive of mm-hmm. what's going on is super helpful. And then, you know, I think once you start to feel a connection to like your body being able to do things that you didn't know it could do, then I think that there's just like this energy of play and exploration that starts happening. You know, like nothing's really off limits for me anymore. Like, I have had orgasms just from like hands, just like fingers being run on my body. Mm-hmm. I started having orgasms from nipple play a few weeks ago. Oh, I'm like, nice. I don't know. Somebody might touch my third eye and I'll have an orgasm at some point. Like, I don't know. Right. But I think, again, like societal influences, we're sort of mm-hmm. told for so long that it's about penetrative activity. It's about, you know, especially in hetero relationships, right? That it's about penis and vagina, right? And I think actually for so many people, the pathways to pleasure and to orgasm are at the very least much more holistic than that mm-hmm. and require much more like full body interaction and participation. Or the penetrative activity might not be the thing at all for people. And so I think the first thing just starts like with your mind, just opening yourself up to the idea that like it doesn't have to be that, and that your whole body is primed for pleasure mm-hmm. if you will allow it to be, you know?
I love that. I always talk about mind-body connection. And if people are having some sort of issue in the bedroom, that sometimes that, you know, could be linked to something else that's going on.
For sure.
And so that's a really good advice, I think, for people if they want to tap into these other erogenous zones or ways to climax, is to really, yeah, go into your mind first and start like just imagining that spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you described, kind of just bringing energy to it.
Yeah.
I think could really help people relax and possibly experience a good one.
Yeah. Taking the pressure off, you mm-hmm. know, just mm-hmm. like
It's just exploration.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I will also say, like, if you are female identifying and you have, and you've been in always in hetero relationships and you have any inclination to explore something else, like, go for it. And I think the same goes for men, right? Like, so much harder for traditionally hetero men to feel like they can explore any kind of bisexuality or queerness, right? I think that's changing slowly but surely. But like, you just, it is a different relationship, you know, and it's different sex. And that is really intensely beautiful and incredible. And it's also like, it also serves my love story with my husband. You know, there are things that have opened up in my sex and in my connection with this woman that then I can also bring back into my primary relationship and into my marriage, you know? And that's a really incredible thing.
That's great advice. Thank you. It is an incredible thing. It is. Well, I guess as we're wrapping up, do you want to share that last time you had that sweet release, whether it was yesterday, this morning?
Yeah, it
any
was
specific details.
It was last night. It was last night. Four times.
Oh, yes. Sweet spot. Mine's usually three.
Maybe more. You start to lose count at a certain point too, you know? And like with the internal orgasms, you're like, to some degree, you're kind of like, where does one end and the next one begin? You know, it's like, it's hard to keep count. But first one was with fingers.
Okay, nice.
I had like never really been somebody who was like that into fingering until this latest relationship. And now I like can't get enough of it. Well, actually Ian helped, like he had been doing a lot of G-spot stuff. And that's obviously like a place where you can really activate the squirting as well. Mm-hmm. So the last couple of years I've had this like late in life fingering conversion experience. First one was with fingers. Second one was oral, vastly different feeling orgasms. Mm-hmm. Third one was, sex with the strap on.
Nice.
And, no, I guess there were four. Fourth was with sex with the strap on and a vibrator. Okay. And no two orgasms the same. And the night before I had and like a purely energetic orgasm. So we have been running, like you're that. Just like running the gamut these days, you know? And it's like so funny. Like I've been trying not to do this also, but like, it's hard not to think like hierarchically, you know? And so you're constantly like, oh my God, was that the best orgasm of my life? Like, oh my God, you know?
And then the next day you're like, was that one?
Oh my God, totally. They're just like constantly getting topped, constantly. Yeah. And then you're like, you know what? They're all beautiful.
They're all amazing.
They're all amazing, and they all belong here. But I think another component of that too, like when talking about, you know, a lifetime of having some degree of performative sex, like you can't really, 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 truly come and have, I think, truly expansive embodied sexual experiences unless you're willing to lose control. And if you're in any state of being performative, you're by definition in control, right? If you are in control, there's a kind of sexual experience that you are closing yourself off from. So at a certain point, you have to be willing to surrender to not being in control, to not worrying about how hot you look. And then the joke of it is, right? Like, and I'm a dancer and whatever. So I was always like, I know how my body should be positioned. And I know how to like pop my ass out. And like, I know how to pant and, you know, all this shit, right? And then when you're like so in the throes and you just surrender, and this I credit entirely to Ian and the comfort that exists between the two of us, right? You go like, okay, I'm going to let go of all of that. And if I look totally fucking ugly and I make insane noises while I'm coming or my face is looking totally garish, like whatever, he's my husband. He's going to love me anyway. And then the joke is that it actually ends up being the hottest feeling that you could possibly have, right? I'm actually like, then I realized like, oh no, this is actually the sexiest version of me because it's coming from such a place of truth mm-hmm. and honesty. And that feeling of being like that deeply embodied is like, it's the hottest I've ever felt.
Yeah, that vulnerability is like what we all need to just embrace. It's so true.
When was your last orgasm?
When was it? Yesterday. Yeah. We had some sexy time yesterday, didn't we? I can't even remember. Four. I'm like, I had four orgasms yesterday. They all blur together.
The other partner always loves to keep count. I have noticed. It gives you a sense of pride, right? Yeah.
We typically start, I have an oral fixation. I talk about that a lot. I love things in my mouth. I just got a pacifier recently. Oh, nice. But anyways, typically he starts going down on me, but then I want him in my mouth and then we have a vibrator and then, just that dual zones really nice. And then penetration, typically gets a couple more. So yeah.
Hell yeah.
So good.
Hell yeah. Oh my God. You're so reminding good. Me. I've just recently realized that I'm like really into biting, biting and being bitten in a way where I was like, how have I been having sex for all these years in all these crazy ways? And like, I'm just learning this like right now, you know? So that's fun. That's like a fun new exploration. Yay. Also, thanks I'm like, sharing. How hard is too hard? We have not found the threshold yet. We'll see.
I love that. Well, we do have to wrap up a little bit, but I would love for you to share with my listeners kind of where they can find you. Obviously, you have your own show.
Yeah.
If they're interested in connecting with you or learning more.
Yeah. So I also host a talk show called On the Table with Serena, and it is sort of about, it's like, you know, it's not so dissimilar to what you're doing, which is really like, it's a show about exploring the messiness of what it means to be human and alive and leading lives that are like truly authentic and aligned with who we are and acting from a place of courage and not fear. So you can find me on YouTube, On the Table with Serena, or on Instagram, same thing, On the Table with Serena. And we right now do that once a month live. We shoot from restaurants around LA. If you're in LA, you can come see me at Stud Country at Club Vichia.
That I am going to do.
Oh my God, it is so much fucking fun. And they also do it in New York and SF if you're in those cities as well. So, and then I'm on Instagram at Serena Smith with 2 underscores at the end.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Serena.
Thank you. What a delight.
It was so great. And sweets, be sweet to yourself. Be sweet to those new fantasies and those new kind of journeys you're experiencing with your relationships. And I'll see you soon. Bye. Thank you.
Yay. So nice.